and welcome to the EdTech Podcast. This has been a massive week in the EdTech calendar with the Education World Forum and BET taking place in London, as well as many other events including the Education Innovation Conference, Teach Meets and BET Awards. A big hello to everyone I met from around the world and welcome to any new subscribers listening in. Don't forget you can also sign up to the newsletter. I've had the chance to record over 30 hours of amazing stories which will be coming out over the next few weeks, and I've spent a large part of the following days sleeping and recovering. If you happen to find a small plastic box with an EdTech podcast and a Biblio sticker on it, please do feel free to contact me as I lost this during BET and would love to be repatriated. In this week's episode, we have a live EdTech podcast recording from BET, where I moderated a session on STEAM, STEM and cross-curricular learning. I'm in conversation with Sophie Dean of Detective Dot, Dr. Jess Wade of Imperial College, and former D&T teacher turned makerspace doer Jen Grattan. You can also hear us reacting to some live voting from the audience. We cover off resources, funding and inspiration for teachers, career paths for young people looking to engage in science and creativity, and mainstream media depictions or lack of them, i.e. lab technicians, engineers and coders. Don't forget, you can find all the links on Twitter and the show notes. Have a great week, everyone. Yay! So welcome, everyone. And welcome to this session, which is going to investigate what we all think about STEAM. So my name is Sophie Bailey and I'm the founder of the EdTech podcast, which is a podcast which documents education innovation, and about 1,000 people download it each week from 96 countries. And we've got a fantastic panel today. We're going to start by allowing the speakers to introduce themselves for a couple of minutes just to get to know who we've got on the panel today. So Sophie, do you want to kick off?
Oh, okay, it works.
There we go.
Hello, I'm Sophie and I make children's stories about Detective Dot, who is a 9-year-old coder, and she has a sidekick drone and she's part of the CIA, which is a children's intelligence agency. And so it's a super fun story and an interactive story to get all kids, but particularly girls and unrepresented groups, into coding and STEM.
Oh, I'm on. I'll go first then. Hi, my name is Jess and I am a physicist at Imperial College in the Department of Physics and Centre for Plastic Electronics, where I make flexible solar panels and light emitting diodes using conjugated organic polymers. Outside of that, I do an awful lot to get young people into science and design and technology and engineering, and I'm super passionate about it, and I campaign a lot with the WISE campaign, so Women in Science and Engineering, and the Women's Engineering Society. I'm a massive, massive fan of Detective Dot and everyone at the Children's Intelligence Agency, and it's a great honor to be here today.
Right, so I'm Jenny. My background is in teaching DT. So I taught in mainstream secondary schools for 6 years in East London, just up the road in fact, and got very frustrated with the system, so decided to take a step away from the classroom and explore more alternative maker-led education, which took me to America, where I worked for a summer with the Tinkering School, and last summer and this summer are going to be spent with Project Ember, who focus on the ideation of large-scale arts and engineering projects that unleash children's imaginations.
Thanks very much, everyone. So first up, just thinking about some of these acronyms that we use. So what I'd like you to do is think about, as an audience, do you describe yourself as a scientist, a technologist, an engineer, an artist, or a mathematician? So have a think about that, and then we'll see what the answers are that come in.
Can we vote?
Yeah, you can vote, yeah. There we go. So most people in the audience would describe themselves as a technologist, with a good third as artists and slightly less as scientists.
Where are all our engineers?
No mathematicians and no engineers, or none that declare themselves none of the above. So the purpose of this, to be honest, was incredibly crass and was to suggest perhaps some of these labels. I mean, when I asked you to say, okay, you are scientist, technologist, perhaps there's a few of us, but perhaps these labels are slightly boxing us in. So, Sophie, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I'm a commitment phobe, so I hate describing myself as any one thing because I'm worried that I'll exclude the possibility of being the other things. And when I look at this, or the A in STEAM, I think that the art part and the creativity part is so fundamental to everything that it's like having a box saying a reader or something. You know, we need literacy, and creativity is as basic a skill that underpins everything else as anything else. So I think that it's a bit arbitrary, and I don't really have an opinion about
it. You don't really care for it.
I don't know, I don't mind if people say STEM or STEAM, but I don't think it's a perfect solution.
And Jess, I know that when we spoke before, your thoughts on this were, okay, well, we've put the A in, but the point is that some of the original STEM, so for example, mathematicians or mathematics, aren't really included in some of those discussions anyway.
Yeah, I think that increasing the length of the acronym only makes it more complicated and difficult for schools to interpret. So STEM is difficult enough, and it kind of fuses science, technology, engineering, and maths in a weird way that I think schools aren't really ready for. So kind of alongside their science lessons and their maths lessons, they now have a STEM club, which students don't really understand how it's different to what they're doing otherwise. And then we're adding A in, and it just overcomplicates everything, because people don't really, as you said, talk to the maths department. As we can see, there are no mathematicians here. And then beyond that, I just think integrating it with the arts is super, super difficult. And obviously, as Sophie said, I completely agree, creativity is so massively fundamentally important to the whole of the rest of STEM that it should just be there by default. We shouldn't have to define it. And there's a great chat about science teaching and stuff every Monday evening called A's Chat. I don't know if it's the Association of Science Education. And it's on Twitter, and it's for an hour. And it's just hashtag A's Chat. And this week, the theme was STEAM. And the participation was probably the lowest I've ever seen. And absolutely no one knew what they were supposed to be talking about. And for about half an hour at the beginning, it was the leader of this chat saying, is anyone else here? Is anyone else here? And I just think that's my massive terror with this, is that you just add an extra letter and stop other people from participating in it.
I mean, Jen, what are your thoughts?
So I have mixed feelings on STEAM versus STEM, or in fact, those titles altogether. So I think it's really exciting that arts have finally been brought to the table in this thing. But like both these ladies have said, like, it should be the creativity that the arts is essentially they're trying to bring in should be there already. And we are having a real problem in schools, particularly secondary schools, with compartmentalizing subjects. Kids don't understand that everything actually in the real world relates to each other. As a DT teacher, I would have kids turn around to me and be like, why are we writing? I'm not in an English class. To which point, you know, brick wall and your head come to mind. But I think that we should, it's really exciting that there is a push for cross-curricular learning. And I think it's fundamentally important that more of that happens in schools. But I don't think it needs to be labelled science, technology, engineering, arts and math, because I just think, again, we're still compartmentalising. We're still potentially excluding kids that don't relate to those terms. And I think, like, project-based learning, so starting off with a central theme which can bring together all different subjects, is a much more exciting way to go.
Also,
if you kind of look historically at people in the past, during the Renaissance, they were never defined themselves as artists or scientists. They did the metalwork, they had the workshops, they were artisans, they were creating all of this different kind of stuff. And I was reading about Nobel Prize winning laureates in the sciences, and they're 2.5 times more likely to play a musical instrument than other scientists if you win a Nobel Prize. I think I've messed up the explanation of that, but basically you're much more likely to win a Nobel Prize if you're a scientist and a musician to if you don't play a musical instrument. And that's insane. Like, that creativity is there. It's in all of the blood, the heartbeat of successful scientists and engineers. And we're not integrating it enough just to make it normal, to say that this is normal. Amazing musicians do science. They play a violin, all this other stuff.
When you asked me this originally, and when we talk about it, I never know what arts means. And I don't really know what science means.
She's always on about this.
So, like, I don't know if anyone cares anyway. Do you know what I mean? But
I mean, I think that's quite a good juncture to bring us on to another vote. So if you go to your device, tap in the URL, and we'll have another vote on this. So is creativity the reserve of the arts? And as an anecdote for this, so yesterday I heard from the founder of Cobra Beer, who also happens to now be a Lord and Chancellor of the University of Birmingham, and probably a beer expert. And his point was, so he grew up in India, and he was told, oh, you can't do art, you're rubbish at drawing. And, you know, that was ingrained in him until when he started to go into business, he realized that actually I'm incredibly creative, and that's what's made me a successful business person. And so now he's very passionate about relaying that idea that creativity isn't something that is about drawing necessarily. It's just a kind of mindset and a skill base. So whilst I'm waffling on, perhaps you will have voted. So let's see what the audience think. So no, is the resounding answer. So
we can go home.
Yeah, let's all just go home. Let's start with Jen. Oh, someone's gone rogue. Who's that? Jen, what are your thoughts on the question?
On whether creativity is the reserve of the arts? Yes. Absolutely not. As someone who loved art and design growing up, that was one way of being creative and showing my creative expression. But I think that we are being very obtuse if we don't encourage young people to see that they can be creative in all different subjects. You know, you're never going to do something groundbreaking in the field of science if you're not going to think creatively and outside of the box and challenge the status quo.
From a other perspective also, I did an art foundation before starting my physics degree at Imperial, and I think having that kind of creative, being able to use software or think in this kind of creative visual way has definitely helped with both kind of scientific posters, scientific presentations, how you present data. I mean, so the biggest success story of the Guardian newspaper is their infographics. That's how they make most money. And that's the kind of perfect fusion of data, pure hard stats, and presenting something in a visual way that people can interpret and kind of find beautiful. So I think there's so many examples of it being incredibly useful to have some basic training in the arts, whatever the arts are.
Just to play the devil's advocate, though, in our discussion, you also mentioned, you know, there is the alternative school of thought about the scientific approach and that being sort of very specific, and whether, you know, that is one corner that does stay outside of this.
I think Sophie's completely right, and both Sophies. Defining science is really, really hard to do, but the process by which we do science is incredibly well defined. So kind of coming up with questions, coming up with ways to answer the questions, taking data, getting that kind of thing. And I'm not being controversial, I think, in saying it's less well defined for the arts. And I think that, well, for the arts, purely fine art perspective, you can go at it now from so many different ways, and there are so many different and beautiful expressions of art in life. Whereas with science, it's very much a kind of procedure that you follow, which is quite satisfying for someone who likes to think like that. You know, you have your method, you have your experimental details, you have X, Y, and Z.
But I think what gets missed out from the scientific method in how it's taught in schools is that it's open, it's an investigation, and you don't know the results. Whereas the way that it was taught to me was like, we're going to do this thing so that you can remember this fact.
Yeah.
There was no one ever said this is creative, or you might think of something new, or actually no one has got a clue how the world works. We just sort of know a little bit. So I think that the way it's taught seems like it's finite. It doesn't seem like an investigation.
I think it's taught largely by people probably who aren't here today, who are kind of scared of the science. And it's much, much easier to teach an experiment where you say, we know this answer, this is what we want to get to, and this is what we're doing, this is the principle we're trying to prove, than just throw loads of equipment on a table and be like, explain gravity. That's really hard for a scared, not technical or specialized teacher. So we kind of have to get them through that education, get them excited enough to get to university, even beyond university. So Alexia, who's here in the audience, is an undergraduate physicist at Imperial now, and she can probably testify that we spend a large part of our time proving constants that other old scientists have done and stuff like that, and not being super creative until you get to kind of master's and research level. And then you take ownership. Because we just don't have the facilities to let everyone become a researcher until they've decided that that's what they want to do. I think there's not enough space in universities. There's not enough I completely disagree with the way it's taught. I wish we all went in and did our research projects. And I really fell in love with physics when I was given my own freedom in a lab. And I think a lot more people would. And it's just impossible to do for the numbers of people that we educate.
Yeah, and that's exactly the same system in particularly a secondary school environment where, again, I'm going to come to the defense of teachers who probably aren't here right now because they're in their classrooms. But, you know, I think a lot of teachers are teaching with drained creativity themselves. And so when the system is draining it from you, it's really hard to then encourage that in your kids. And especially at sort of GCSE and A levels, when ultimately they're under pressure to get them to pass the exam. It doesn't leave a huge window for these opportunities to just have lessons where kids get to explore. And then that feeds all the way through the system, whether it's university or going out into the workplace.
So for kind of the big creativity one, for going into these amazing, insane jobs in engineering, no one here who specialized or identified as an engineer, you need physics. To do physics at A level, most schools say, oh, you have to have done really well in maths GCSE. And if you've got maths, if you've got further maths, if you've got physics, that's completely like your A level set taken up. You're completely full then. And very few schools will then let you take art or something on top of it. Yeah. And I think that really stifles it too. So we're really, really quenching it. I don't know, back to the kind of project-led thing, because I think that's an amazing idea. There was an amazing program on BBC over Christmas called Big Life Fix. I don't know if anyone watched it, and if you didn't, you should look it up. But it was kind of creative engineers, makers, and problem solvers coming together to solve really, really difficult problems. Lots of them medical, some about kind of, one was about getting internet in a really remote village in Wales. One was someone with Parkinson's. You may have seen that pen that the amazing Microsoft scientist designed that could overcome the vibrations from Parkinson's. And it just seems like putting all these people around the table to talk together, you can solve much, much bigger problems than separately. And it's all that problem-solving approach.
So if we jump on that, we seem to have agreed that cross-curricular approaches make sense. So I just wanted to check in with the audience. I've put a few ideas up about how we might be able to stimulate cross-curricular approach to learning. So I'd like to see what your thoughts are on those and if you have any particular preferences. So I'll give you a few more seconds and then we'll reveal that vote.
There was an amazing ticket launch this week at the Royal Opera House, which was a collaboration between the Institute of Physics and the Royal Opera House's ballet. And it was looking at gravity and the kind of physics of ballet. It sold out in about 23 seconds. Like, I don't know who the lucky people were who tried to get...
Well, it's like we have Imogen Heap. Imogen Heap's speaking here. She's a musician.
Is she?
Yeah, I'm interviewing her.
I love her.
Yeah, so it's going to be good. You should listen to the podcast. And she embraces technology and music. And you think about people like Bjork as well. Millions of them. Okay, so government strategy change is what's going to get more cross-curricular teaching and learning in schools. So I don't know. I think Justin Greening was supposed to speak this week. What have we got second? Design and tech lessons as an intermediary between science and art. So that's something we spoke about, wasn't it, Jen?
Yeah, it was. I think DT is one of those subjects that is actually in a very fortunate place where you do have the opportunity to do cross-curricular projects if you so choose. So I would encourage anyone who is a DT teacher or knows a DT teacher or works in a school to give DT teachers the opportunity to talk to their colleagues in other departments, actually set time aside for those conversations to happen, because I think that the subject matter that can be brought into a DT project is incredibly exciting and helps to create those cross-curricular links. And if you are doing it collaboratively, then it shouldn't be a huge extra workload, because you're using the skills and experience from, you know, the music department, geography department, whoever you want to be working with. I also think DT lends itself into the realm of makerspaces, which do appear on there. Not hugely confident, but I think that will be a growing way to allow all classrooms, you know, from primary school upwards, to have the opportunity to have a bit more creativity and flexibility in how they teach. If you can incorporate a movable, adaptable space that teachers can then use for the projects and the subjects that they're teaching, so it's not just, again, confined to one subject area that you're going to be making something in or designing something in, and let's actually start to open that conversation up to the whole school and make it accessible to everyone. I think it could be hugely exciting.
If I remember correctly, Sophie, you've had experience with the DfE, whether through partnerships and that kind of thing, but also with school clubs, which was another thing mentioned here, is, you know, could that be, or is there a risk that it gets sort of pushed out to the fringes and after school clubs?
As Tesco say, I think every little helps.
Yes.
So I used to work at Code Club, which are just over there.
Not Tesco.
No, I never worked at Tesco. But Code Club were basically like, they get techies to go into schools and deliver a curriculum at primary level. So when kids have enough literacy and numeracy that they can start coding on scratch. And it was really cool because you had a lot of people who were really motivated to get coding taught in schools. And we saw about 40% of the Code Club kids were females, were young girls. So it was really good to prove that everybody can code and everyone likes coding. And it actually helped when the government decided to implement, it's now compulsory, so five-year-olds have to learn to code in schools. And we're the first country in the world to do that. And everyone was freaking out about it because it's hard to teach something that you've never been taught. Plus, it's hard if you're a teacher because it's really hard. And so I think it was an excellent way to start raising awareness of the issues, taking a grassroots approach and doing something about a problem instead of just talking about a problem. So I think they definitely have their place. And I think that parents have so much influence over children that to say that school is where you're going to solve problems is not right, and that clubs that can engage with families and parents, normal families, not affluent families that know about coding, is a really good thing too. So I think that it's good.
It's the same with the makerspaces. I think, yeah. I don't know if everyone in the audience is familiar with what it is. I certainly would have had no idea before about a year ago. But there are loads of them across the country, and you can kind of go online and just Google makerspace in your local area, and they take you in, and, well, they take you in. That makes them sound ridiculous.
It's a cult.
You can go in, your parents can go in, you learn a skill, you can make, you can do. Imperial's just opening a huge new one in our West Campus, not just for the people of Imperial to actually learn how to make cool pieces of kit, but also for the surrounding area and the people in White City. And I think it is massive, this idea that you learn collaboratively and together.
Yeah.
And then one more kind of super cool interdisciplinary thing that happens. All art galleries have quite an integrated and in-depth chemistry center. So the way that they look for kind of forgeries in art is doing spectroscopy and stuff like that. So the National Gallery in London has a whole lab underneath the National Gallery. Wow. And they do projects with the Royal Society of Chemistry. And they do big days where you can kind of get a lab in a lorry and do loads of spectroscopy and try and characterize forged pigments and stuff like that. And that's just insane. If I'd known about that at school, I'd have been like, I mean, I would definitely want to go into chemistry. I love chemistry. I missed it so much during my undergraduate. But I think that you can, I think, those kind of things exist, and it's kind of onus on the teacher and people to look for them, find whatever you're really, really passionate about, and find a way of linking them.
That's really interesting, because from what you said there, I mean, if I was a student in London, I'd be really excited to know that I could go to that. If Jen and I grew up on the Isle of Wight, and we all know that's the ghetto from David Hoare. And anyway, the point being is, you know, how much of this is happening outside of the urban centres? And also, from your point of view, Jen, yeah. I mean, you've experienced this and how it's sort of taken off in the US. How much, what's the difference between your experience there versus the UK?
Vastly different. So the last two summers that I was working on these projects in the States, I mean, there's just such a huge movement, particularly in sort of San Francisco and the Bay Area, for alternative education provision. And people are really thinking about education in such a different way. So the guy who founded the Tinkering School, Gabe Vitale, I fully recommend watching his TED Talks. He also founded a school called Brightworks, which is an all-year-round kindergarten through to 12th grade school, which works in the same on the same premise as Tinkering School in terms of project-based learning. So every term, they study an arc and they will bring in experts from that field, and they have the flexibility to go out and visit people who are doing the work, and the kids have full access to, within the school building, which is like a converted warehouse, they have, you know, tools and equipment and making stuff available, as well as all of the other ways in which you would perhaps write something about a project or present about a project. And these kids are coming out with so much confidence and excitement and passion for the things they're learning, because they're learning it in a way that feels real and that is what they can see people doing outside.
Be controversial?
You can.
Is it firstly because American education is largely such a mess that they have to take ownership of it? And is secondly, what happens when certain presidents axe all the funding to the arts?
Betsy DeVos. So,
yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the funding cuts. But yeah, I mean, also to put into perspective, a lot of these schools are independent. They're not necessarily things that are going into perhaps some of the mainstream classrooms, although charter schools are really taking a stance and a view on how to make their education more relevant to the communities that they're in. And I think that that's one of the really key things. It's like, we're teaching kids across the country, and like Sophie said, like, kids who are on the Isle of Wight in so many ways are massively disadvantaged to kids who are living in London or wherever else. Like, everyone has their own unique community and issues and stuff, and it's like, we need to be more creative with the way that we're educating our kids, that's relevant to them and can help support them. But also I think, like, the summer camp stuff could be easily tied in with how you could do those kind of projects as a club. So it doesn't have to be something that, you don't have to completely rehaul, you know, the entirety of the school education, but by bringing in clubs, you're taking away the pressures of the national curriculum, first of all. Like, that's really liberating for the teachers, let alone the kids. And you are finding ways to unleash your own creativity and really show them and bring experts in and different things like code.
Two things that we haven't discussed at all that the UK is massively good at and integrates science and arts, the film industry and gaming. And we are like the biggest manufacturers of video games in the world, the UK, and yet we don't have kind of computer science and physics graduates largely going into these jobs because they don't see them as places they could go and work. Mm. And yet kind of they're really struggling to recruit the right graduates in massive video games companies and film things. So there's huge, huge salaries for scientists and engineers.
It's really interesting. I interviewed every teacher and school leader's favourite, Andrea Schleicher, yesterday from the OECD with the PISA tables. And one of the points of the report is that we're getting, all of our graduates are coming out and they're actually overqualified for the jobs, but they don't have the skills. Mm. So they've got this signifier degrees, but they don't actually have the skills to sort of specifically go into an area. And I just wonder, sort of, something like that, where, you know, you could really hone into a specific industry that's taken off, that's creative.
If someone came to you early on in your undergraduate degree and said, this is an option, this is a chance, we never have that. Kind of when you go to a science or an engineering or maths university, you have the lovely investment banks waiting to recruit you from about day one, and endless free pens and free lunches if you go and have dinner with HSBC. But you don't have any of that kind of, into film are never there, double negative are never there. We make such great graphics in this country, and yet they're never there at the science fairs advertising to these kind of people. And a lot of it is on you too, to kind of go out and look for these careers, I admit.
So let's see who said this. So was it Sugata Mitra, Mary Myatt, or William Shakespeare? So it was William Shakespeare, everyone. not Sugata Mitra. So, and I will explain why I'm doing this in a minute. So there's one more. So while bodily labours performed under constraint do not harm the body, nothing that is learned under compulsion stays with the mind. So who said this?
Sophie, are you Googling it?
No, I'm doing
Sophie's
it.
Sophie's just doing her online shopping with Waitrose. She's got she's coming this evening.
No, Tesco, remember?
Oh, yeah, Tesco, yeah. She's got to deal with them.
I do not
brilliant.
Support Tesco.
Has everyone voted? Let's have a look. So now I think you get the idea. So yes, this was Plato and the Republic. And my point of including these was, so I was thinking about this idea of, you know, STEAM, STEM, progressive, traditionist, and talking about whether they're kind of false dichotomies and all of that. And the point is like, this whole conversation has been going on for eras and eras and eras and eras. So coming to the point of solutions, and hopefully we've got some teachers and leaders and people who can make a change in the audience. So do you have any ideas around solutions and resources or people that can connect with you? You had that great idea about the National Gallery. Sophie, do you want to kick off?
Well, I feel quite strongly about this because I was a bad learner in school, and I just don't get on with traditional learning or education systems. But all kids and all people love stories, and lots of people like cartoons and movies, and we've got this huge issue with mass media and sort of being conditioned all the time and the messages that we're getting from it. So I think that, like, forget school, although school is great, but if we look at what we're learning outside of school, I think it's really difficult to compete with that. So outside of school in kids' stories, basically, it's predominantly white men doing science. There's very few females in any of our kids' books. There's very few engineers, coders. They're all sort of princesses. I think under 3% of characters are black. There's one book now with a coder in it. And we've got all of these sort of image issues you don't see in movies and you don't see in programs, role models. So you don't know what you can be if you want to be an engineer. It's not cool. Like, you can't even see it. It's not visible.
We can all become Brian Cox.
I think we should do it. We should be positive. It shouldn't be like, Jess says this, but you shouldn't, no kid is going to be like a scientist because they heard that there wasn't a lot of representation for women in science. Who cares? You're going to be a scientist because you think it's really cool, because you've seen a role model or your curiosity has been sparked or you've made something. And so I think that we should be appealing to the very human and positive, fun stuff about science. And that we should be doing it in mass media and not just focusing on schools.
I think also if we focus on kind of solving global problems, that includes a lot more people, kind of local and global problems. So say in the area around you, a lot of people have diabetes. Why don't you do a whole science project researching why people have that? Or if you're looking at kind of massive global challenges like the big ones Bill Gates launched, get everyone working on a solar issue.
Yeah.
But get people solving something that's not just blowing each other up or playing on this video game that doesn't achieve anything. And I think that's another way to get girls into the conversation as well, is to make it kind of more, I think the world's altruistic, but I don't know enough words. But I think that is it, to kind of make it more feel good. You're doing something for society and helping other
people.
I don't
agree. Not about the girls, no.
So I think, I by and large think girls do connect more with that kind of thing.
Why? Nature or nurture?
Just probably nurture.
Nurture.
We haven't had a chance to discover that yet, because we haven't had a world where women make most of the decisions. So, you know, perhaps we'll continue to blow shit up, or perhaps we will... be a bit nicer, I don't know.
There are also amazing examples in public life of people who integrate them really well. I don't know if you've seen Marcus de Satory talk. He's a mathematician at Oxford. He's kind of the public professor for the understanding of science, which is this massive title that I think he's a bit frightened of. But he was also a musician, and he's obsessed by prime numbers and kind of prime numbers representing themselves in nature, prime numbers representing themselves in music, and he speaks very eloquently about it. And there are these kind of people who are doing the proper research, they're doing the proper science, they're absolutely brilliant, and they're champions of this already. So I think alongside finding great maker spaces to go and learn how to kind of 3D print and do needlework, also find these kind of champions like Ken Robinson, these people that you really look up to, yeah. And you think like, four, like that is what I want to be, and kind of echo what they do of it. And read all their books, they're amazing. Or watch their TED Talks if you don't have time to read books.
If you like books and inspiration, I have put together a Goodreads list of all of the book recommendations of all of the people who come on as guests, so you can check out that at, I think it's the EdTech podcast on Goodreads. But Jen,
amazing. I think, I guess coming from someone who's been inside a school, what can schools do to start making this a reality is give their teachers more autonomy, give them time, like actually make that time meaningful and purposeful. So when you have Inset and Twilights and stuff, like I've sat through some great ones, but I've sat through some appalling ones, and it's like those conversations could be spent with colleagues in different departments creating opportunities for cross-curricular learning, and it's not, and that will be far more productive to the outcomes, I'm 100% sure, in your school if you can start to encourage those conversations. I think either trying to find out if you have access locally to like local makerspaces and stuff and show kids what is out in the community, or if not, actually like try and create them within your own school. There are people, myself included, who can come and talk to you about creating a bespoke movable thing. It doesn't even have to be big, it doesn't have to be a huge budget, but it means that different subjects and different teachers can teach in a different way and show kids that their subject isn't just how it's currently painted to be. I would also fully agree that trying to do projects that involve global issues and community issues. So there's a school or a project at a charter school in the States called Project H, and it's at a school called Realm. And the lady that set it up has also done a TED talk. Her name's Emily Pillerton, and they basically get the kids to build something that's going to go into the local community. So they've built stands for farmers markets. They've built tiny houses, which they've donated to homeless charities and things like that. And it's actually getting kids to learn all of the really important fundamental practical skills, but it having a real life tangible outcome. I think it's a really exciting opportunity that we could be bringing into our education.
We have it. So in the UK, a bit closer to home, we have something called Primary Engineer, which is, and Secondary Engineer, which is getting kids to design products of the future for their local community. And the winner from last year was a little kind of, I think she was maybe four, but she designed this tiny drone, and it was absolutely adorable. And UCL are making it now.
Like, whoa,
that's insane, and that happens. So I think find these things that are already happening.
Yeah.
Don't try and reinvent the wheel. And if you want to set up a makerspace under Jen's great advice, then find someone who will give you the money to do it. The Royal Academy of Engineering have an amazing scheme called Ingenious. It's £30,000 that you can get. And you just have to be good at writing applications and get loads of facts and stats inside it. And you can get this money to do it, to build these things, to make it for you, for your school, for your community. And it's not impossible.
So, and just to quickly put that into context before we jump onto the questions, I know you told me how few girls took the, was it the computing science A-level?
Yeah.
Just to put this into context, it is quite shocking.
Last year, actually, there was big stats saying that the number of girls who took computer science A-level had increased last year. And of course it increased, because the number of boys who took computer science A-level also increased, because more people are taking computer science A-level. Last year it was about 650 who took it nationally. There's way, way more people here than that in this room today. That is absolutely terrifying that we're not producing
these people. And it's less now than in 1984.
Well, that's physics. So
no, computer science.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. But it's a completely different course now. Physics has gone down.
Yeah, it is different.
And your point also was that the changing structure will mean that there's probably less next time as well.
Yeah, so I don't know how many people here teach A-level, and I completely agree with Sophie. It has gone down. Computer science, physics, further maths, the number of people sitting these subjects that are super important have gone down, and that is terrible. But the changing curriculum, going towards a kind of linear scheme where you choose three A-levels in year 12 when you're way too young to be choosing the three subjects that you're choosing for the rest of your life, people are now choosing three. And further maths or physics or computer science is often that fourth option for girls. And if they're now choosing three in year 12, it's not even going to be on the table. And that, for me, is terrifying. Like, that is really scary.
Okay, we have got 7 minutes, so we're going to try and answer as many audience questions as we can in a kind of meaningful but rapid-fire manner. So first one, let's just go to the top one. Do you think the mainstream media is covering STEAM well enough?
No. Absolutely not. And actually, I was talking to some people this week about how amazing it would be if EastEnders got a coder or an engineer or a mathematician just to bring some normality into it. And doctors had this issue in the profession where it was male-dominated, and now it's changed. And part of the reason,
I think... casualty.
We've got casualty, we've got Holby City, ER. There's genuinely quite a lot of role models, so that if you think of a doctor as a young person, you can think, oh, that could be me. We do not have that across them.
I've now got... I've been shot. That was from casualty, wasn't it? Anyway, ignore that.
I would say also, when they do have like a STEAM picture, I've seen this a lot on Twitter, especially over the past few weeks, but every time they're like, check out these female scientists in the lab, and they're all there with like a full face of makeup and their hair down in a lab coat, and I'm like, that is not what it's like doing science in a lab. We're not allowed to have our hair down. I think over glamorizing it is not. So when it is represented, it's represented badly. Yep. It's, I suppose, what I'm trying to say more eloquently.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think children get streamed into being good at maths or good at creative subjects too early?
Yes.
So we have to choose one or the other.
Yeah. I think in the UK especially, we're very bad at thinking that you can get good at a subject. We think you're born good at maths. So you get a lot of grown-ups especially who are like, oh, I've always been rubbish at maths. No, you haven't. So I think that in other countries, you would never, ever say, I was always rubbish at maths. You would say, I worked until X to be able to learn differentiation. But that concept is a very British thing, and I think I don't know how we get rid of that. I guess it's let's blame the government again, but it's really difficult to do.
No, but it hugely impacts kids in classrooms as well, hugely. When teachers have got this unconscious bias towards the young boys and how they will say, how they'll talk about them doing maths, and they think that girls are going to be worse at maths. That really genuinely influences the way that the children see themselves
so
and the
choices they make. Is there something there about having anonymous marking or anonymous feedback? So I was at an event yesterday and they were talking about, you know, that would take out some teacher bias. Also, if you knew that a child was very able and then you start to mark expecting them to be very good at their whatever paper they're doing.
That would be really interesting. I think it would be more interesting as a way to show unconscious bias to teachers who then would hopefully change and not need to be treated in that sort of manner, where I think that might be quite harsh on teachers. I think that we just all need to have more training on our unconscious biases because we all have them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that really exists that people don't think that they're creative. Like they come into classes and they're like, I can't do that. I'm not creative. I can't draw or whatever. And in Ken Robinson's Out of Our Minds book, he talks about the fact that we don't do that with other subjects as well. You don't go, oh, well, I was born and I couldn't read, so therefore I'm never going to be able to read. Like, it's something that you can learn, and there's the same with creativity, but for some reason we never talk about it in that way. And I think that going back to what Sophie was saying as well, like especially as teachers, you have a responsibility when you're giving case studies and examples of people to have a gender balance. There are plenty of women doing incredible things out there, and if we don't show it to the kids, they're not going to know about it.
I hope you enjoyed that discussion, and don't forget to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher if you enjoyed listening in. And if you want to support the work of the EdTech Podcast, you can contact me, Sophie, at theedtechpodcast@gmail.com.